All right, I got Jeff Lawton with me again. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Paul.
So once again, we're using the mighty power of Skype to be able to talk all across the world. And at the moment, Jeff is in where? Are you in Jordan right now?
I'm in Jordan. I'm in the Dead Sea Valley, the lowest place on Earth.
And it seems to have stopped. A moment ago, I could hear, I thought it sounded like music.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, there's early morning prayer going in the background from the mosques.
Muslims. I mean, like a lot of Muslim folk there.
Yeah, mostly 90% Muslim country, 10% Christian.
Okay, all right. Oh, I think I can hear them.
Yeah, it might get a little bit louder. We're right on dawn here, and
okay.
We're close to the Palestine border.
Oh my! Okay, cool, man. I'm getting all culturified and stuff just using the Skype.
Yeah,
I'm ain't that a deal?
I'm coming to you from the middle of the Holy Lands here. I'm just a few kilometers from where Jesus was christened.
Oh wow! Wow, that's awesome. Now wait a minute. Isn't the word christened, doesn't that have Christ right in it?
Yeah, it was the first one, I suppose, or one of the early ones, let's say.
Okay, all right. So, now how far away are you from the original Greening the Desert site, from like, you know, all the YouTube videos and stuff?
The original site's probably about just less than 3 kilometers from here, mile and a half, something like that.
So now, I was giving a presentation yesterday at a conference in Missoula, and I showed pictures from that site. I just stole them right off of your YouTube video. I hope you don't mind.
No, well done.
Okay. and so now I'm curious, how is that site doing? I know that it got sold and then resold, and the people that currently own it, like, they don't know about permaculture. They're kind of mystified how all this green stuff got here.
Yeah, it didn't get sold. So it's owned by the NGO we were working with at the time. And they're like a lot of NGOs. They're looking for funds to run projects rather than keep a project continuously running. So they didn't really understand the possibility of how you could use a site like that as an ongoing education center. So once the original funding came from the Japanese government, once that stopped, the project didn't easily continue. And it was amazing, and it has been amazing, that over about 8 to 9 years, the project continued to function without even maintenance or irrigation. But then later, one or two other things were tried, and it didn't quite work. In the meantime, we set up a brand new project where we actually made sure that we set our own NGO up in Jordan here, our own permaculture NGO, and the land that we now work on is owned by that NGO, and we have now 4 years of establishment. And actually, we have our very first internship. We've funded the project, just a few small donations on Green in the Desert 2, but other than that, we funded it with our own teaching. Our own permaculture courses, and we've just finished one, and now we've got our very first internship, a 4-week internship, and we've got a Facebook page, Green in the Desert internship Facebook page, and we're putting photographs up every day of what the interns are doing and what the site looks like after 4 years. We've just had our first rain as well. First day of the internship, great sign. We had our first rain here since March. So first rain of the winter, very light, but damped it really nicely. And we've got all kinds of excited internationals, 10 people working away out here in the desert every day.
All right. Progress. So now is there going to be, I imagine there must be, you're going to probably come out with more videos or DVDs or something to show off the current state of your Greening the Desert 2 site.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of reporting, but we'll keep reporting as this site builds. And we've got a Food Forest 2 film in progress. So from Food Forest, the original, to Food Forest 2, where we're going to expand the whole Food Forest deal out to lots of different climates. So we want to do the, we've done Mediterranean, we've done the subtropics, of course, where our institute is in Australia. We're going to cover the dry lands, and we're going to try and get cold climate in there as well. But we'd really like to do specifically for the large audiences in the cold climates, a specific cold climate Food Forest DVD. And we'll probably knock off climate by climate in more specific style, because Food Forest, let's face it, are becoming more and more sophisticated. We have so many global species of inclusion into our perennial systems, and more great people writing on the whole concept of perennial food in a forest form. It's such a stable system to be set up, so that you've got really, really very, very long-term and very special diversity within those perennial food forest systems.
So now, I know that one of the things that I keep reminding people about the food forest stuff, and I have to say that while most people think that your urban permaculture DVD is their favorite, the food forest DVD is my favorite. The thing that I keep reminding people is that if you do permaculture right, that the system will continue to pump out food, and all you got to do is harvest. However, if you go in there and nudge it a little bit, it will double its productivity. Can you verify that what I'm saying is true?
That's absolutely true. The longevity of most of the species within a food forest gives you a long-term resilience. In fact, there's no reason why a lot of them can't be absolutely permanent and almost self-replicating over time. We're assembling such interesting ingredients now. The recipe's getting very, very exotic, but very special. And we're careful about how that goes together. The urban DVD, it appealed to the masses, because the masses of people now are stuck in cities and more are arriving all the time. But the food forest, that touched something. That touched something and inspired a whole movement. The terminology food forest changed after that DVD. It became a sort of generic term from that moment onwards. And I get emails all the time from people thanking us, saying, you know, I'm putting our university food forest in, and we saw your food forest DVD, and there was an organization, Food Forests Across America, and It was such a great thing, and I wanted that to happen because people didn't have that confidence in food forests, and I wanted to, and I'd immerse myself in food forest establishment, and I just love it, and I know people love to be in a forest, and there's nothing better than a forest that feeds you. I mean, how could it be better than that? This is like the original Garden of Eden. This is the oasis in the desert, you know, And people have a real longing for that wow factor of, you know, productive forestry, and food forestry is just the ultimate expression of forests of humanity, I think.
You know, I want to run something by you, because now, as you said that, like, forests in the desert, then it reminded me of when I very first learned about permaculture, and people would ask me, well, what is permaculture? I had a story to tell. I would tell the story of the Sahara and how it used to be a jungle and savanna, and people cut down the trees, and then it became desert, so desertification, and that permaculture is reversing that process. And then I would tell a story that I had heard, but I have never been able to verify it. Maybe you can verify it, or you can tell me that the story is a myth. And that is that I said, in a natural desert in Australia, they went and planted a bunch of trees, and they babied them for 5 years, and then they stopped, and this bunch of trees, this forest that they created that was planted all just right, the permaculture way, it got bigger and bigger and bigger as the years passed. Like, it spread out as well as getting taller, and they started to record higher levels of rainfall there. So now, that's the story. True? Myth? Fantasy?
That's absolutely true, because your deserts appear on the subtropical and Mediterranean lines, and there you get precipitation is almost 40% condensation off the trees. So if you cut down the trees, you go down to, you know, 40% of, sorry, you go down to about 60% of your original precipitation with only rainfall. When you add rainfall to condensation, you go back up. You add that extra 40%. Now, in real dry lands, it can be an equivalent of 80% addition to the rainfall. Rainfall plus condensation. Now, when you extend those together, you also get the cloud-seeding bacteria coming off the leaves of the trees, and this is the Pseudomonas. The Pseudomonas genus are little spiky characters that blow up in the air and they accumulate ice nuclei, and then they get heavy and they come down as heavy ice which melt and become raindrops. And that's what makes a lot of the rain away from the ocean, where you get salt crystals making it rain. Right? So yes, you start to actually get a moderated climate, because everything in dry lands is about anti-evaporation. So as you get the trees up, you get shade, which reduces evaporation. As you get the trees up, you get less hot wind evaporation, anti-evaporation. And then you get the fall of organic matter onto the soil with the birds that fly in and other life forms that are attracted to that ecosystem. And that holds more water in the soil. Anti-evaporation, it becomes a sponge. All of that adds up to a little bit more transpiration. You get a cooler soil surface in the summer months in the day, and you get a warmer soil surface in the cold nights of the winter in the desert. All of that moderates the effect and increases that hydrological cycle in the atmosphere. And I mean, the scientists don't want to add all those things together and come up with that's a result, because they're reductionist type thinkers. But if you put all those elements together, it's a no-brainer. And that's the way permaculture people think. That's the way we act. That's the way we get it to work. I mean, it's time to stop listening to the reductionists and just go out there and do it and prove it. And that's the way I like to do it. Let's just do it. Right, and when it's done, it's all over. I mean, it's obvious. That's what we did in Green in the Desert. They said we couldn't grow a lot of the fruits, and that they were growing. So, you know, a year later, we said, well, you said we couldn't grow figs. Here they are. I mean, what do you got to say now? And they said, well, we've got to test it, find out what you did. And then they said, well, you only did that. That's easy. We could do that. And now we've got things like the Laos Plateau as an example. You know, the work of John D. Louis documented 10 years in the Laos Plateau, 35,000 square kilometers completely rehabilitated over 10 years with just $500 million. I mean, that's a small amount of money per acre for a complete recovery. So we've got examples on the ground. It's checkmate, I'm afraid. It's time to move.
So now I guess my question is that I somehow, when I had heard the story, which I then later conveyed, I conveyed it the way that I'd heard it, which is that there is a place in Australia, this spot. I mean, it's an actual example as opposed to a theoretical. So I guess what I'm fishing for is, do you know what this spot is? I mean, it would have to be like, by now, 30 years old or something like that.
Yeah, I think I know. I think there's a few, but I think you're talking about in North Queensland, in the western districts of North Queensland, there's an area that was planted in with a great diversity of productive trees that has just spread out from that area. And
okay.
We have people up there in North Queensland on the coast who could reference that exactly. I'm sorry, I haven't got the name exactly with me right now, but I could soon look that up.
But how big is it? Do you remember how big it is?
I think it's going out quite a few acres now. I'd have to look exactly because I'd just be guessing, but I've heard of a few situations where People have gone out, sort of extreme characters have just guessed these ideas and put in lots and lots of elements together. You see, Australia doesn't have any native trees that have been domesticated except the macadamia nut, and Australia hasn't had an ice age, so it's really diverse. What the original settlers did, they didn't care what they brought into Australia. So you have a lot of diversity of fruit trees from around the world, and some odd characters got out in the different areas where they got a bit of water available, and they just started to cram in all kinds of things. And they were really surprised what actually happened. And I think you've got quite a few of these variations of people weren't worried about what they were planting. They just put anything and everything together and found these really unusual assemblies started to work like an ecosystem. And they realized they were very productive, lots of diverse fruit coming out.
So that's awesome. I'm very excited to hear that there is an exact place that that substantiates the story. Hot dog. And along those lines, because like yesterday when I was giving my presentation, my presentation that I give is called Replacing Irrigation with Permaculture. And I tell the stories of your work and of Sepp Holzer's work and Willie Smits's work and, of course, Bill Mollison. And one of the stories that I tell of Bill's, and so, you know, of course, you do a lot with Bill. And, I mean, you are the crown prince of permaculture. So you've been handed the keys of the kingdom. So I'm sure you're up to date on all of his stories, right?
Yes, I am, and I've just finished teaching with Bill and Melbourne University, a wonderful course, 80 students. But look, Paul, I think if I'm the crown prince, then you have to be the duke. and I think that's an assignment I've just given you there, and because you're so good at duking it out.
So now I can go around and tell people that I'm the Duke of Permaculture?
That's right.
Okay, I'll do that. I'm going to put it on all my stationery. That's awesome. Thank you, sir. Do I have to get like down on one knee and you're to come at me with a sword and I have to hope you don't lop my head off?
Well, we'll do that internet style. You can imagine I'm doing it to you now, okay? You're getting it from the Holy Lands.
Well, thank you, sir. Now, if anybody asks me if I've ever taken a PDC, I'll just say, hey, Jeff Lawton made me the Duke of Permaculture, man. So thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I'm going to so totally use that title.
Consider yourself all right. The Duke.
Thank you, sir. And now I'm going to go into a more boring topic because I'm excited about being the Duke, and I want to now bask in the glow of that for the next 6 hours, but I also feel like there's a podcast and I should keep going, and that is that the story that I told yesterday, and I've told it probably 100 times, is that somewhere in Australia there was this community that was drying up, and it was turning into a ghost town, and it had a lot to do with the fact that the desertification was getting so extreme. And a lot of the houses were empty, and so the remaining community somehow cobbled together whatever and convinced Bill to come out and help them. And he did, and now they hate Bill. And the reason why they hate Bill is because he planted, as part of his technique of greening the area, and the community is thriving now, and it's like a little oasis in the middle of the desert. And the reason why they hate him is because he planted thornless honey locusts. And as I've heard the story, and I've repeated the story, and I need you to confirm the story, they're paying something like $100,000 to have all of the honey locusts removed from the area because it's driving them nuts. So, verification for the story?
No, I don't know this one, but I can imagine it happening. And I can imagine people not understanding how a pioneer legume tree like honey locust can be a great asset to a landscape that is perpetually being damaged and has been damaged. It's a little bit like mesquite, the prosopis. People don't understand the position it's taking to recover ecosystems out of out of damage. There is a very big misunderstanding of hardworking immigrants that want to recover landscape. People don't understand. They cauterize the damage. They cauterize the wound of damage on the landscape and heal the scar and bring it back into a healthy landscape again. And we can work with them. We can work with the power of those natural systems to bring back productivity. But I don't know of that exact landscape. I can ask Bill that. I haven't heard about that one exactly, no.
I would enjoy hearing back about whether it's real or not. I mean, I can imagine it, and it's, I think there's a lot, if nothing else, even if the story turns out to have not actually happened, I do think that there's a good moral to the story, and that is that a lot of the stuff that we use as a pioneer species to help get things, you know, reestablished do tend to be pokey. So, and then later people, they have that first wave of gratitude, and then later that's like, you know, there's this infestation of poking stuff, and they decide that, they forget how things used to be so deserty and bad, and all that they remember is the poke that's here today.
Yeah, they don't move in and realize that quickly you can adjust the type of forest that then recovers after the honey locust. But you have that opportunity. It's now given you an opportunity to move into a perennial productive forest system. Whatever the theme of that forest, or whether it's a complete mixture of theme, food and fiber and timber and forage all mixed, or whether it's just along one of those themes alone, you have that opportunity. People have not, well, I think they are realizing now, they are realizing the security in perennial food forest, perennial forest systems. I think this is the tipping point, the turning point of people's reality. They're starting to realize, we have survival issues coming up, and we better start looking at what would actually work for us in the most long-term, secure, and efficient way. And what happens if our supply lines in our present mode of operation start to fall over or start to collapse? Then when you make your choices, it becomes very, very obvious that the most stable systems are the forested ecosystems.
So now, you've touched on to how our whole podcast has gotten started, and that is that this morning I woke up and I had an email from you saying, I've done all these things. Look. So first of all, there's a TED Talk out, just came out, and with you. And then along with that, you came out with a brand new website. And it's for the first time ever, you've got a project that you're doing, and maybe it's not the first time ever, away from PRI. It's more of a personal project.
That's right.
So, yeah. And then the thing about the new personal project, there's a video on it called How to Survive the Coming Crisis. So you were just saying survive. And it reminded me of, we need to create systems that are resilient. And yesterday, when I was presenting, just before my presentation, I saw a presentation by one of your guys, Owen Hablitzel. And he gave this presentation in Jordan, and it was a little bit different yesterday in Missoula, and it was on resilient science. And what an amazing – and I've done a podcast with him about this resilient science.
Yeah.
So I imagine that resilient science, of course, plays a large factor in everything that you do. I'm covering too much stuff too fast. First, let's talk about the TED Talk. You arrived in the United States a little while ago. In fact, I was talking to Owen on the phone, and you took the phone away from him and said, "Hi, Paul." So you were in the United States. You were in California. You were the keynote speaker in Northern California for their permaculture convergence.
That's right. Yeah, it was a great pleasure. I haven't worked in America for about 3 or 4 years now, and And I was invited to talk, and I was able to fit it in on my way to Jordan. And it was great. I did a talk at the actual convergence, and a real good group of people, large number of people. And then I ran a workshop for 5 days, a little bit of an advanced workshop. We did a little bit of earthworks, and we talked about water harvesting and food forests. And it was a really good crew, and I really enjoyed it. It was great. And they crammed in my schedule, which is okay. I put my hand up to allow that to happen. But they got me booked in to do a TEDx talk in San Francisco at Madrone Studios there. And I said, okay. And it was more or less the first day I arrived, so I walked straight into it. And that was it was another good thing. I got a TED talk, a keynote talk, and a bit of teaching done, and then flew over here to start my teaching here in Jordan.
So now, before I forget, I should probably mention that, speaking of keynote in California, I'll be the keynote speaker in San Diego in March. So yeah, come on over, will you? we'll hang out. Yep. Come on back to California.
Yeah, I'd love to.
little beachside. I mean, because here in Montana, of course, you know, you get, when March first starts coming around, you're getting pretty tired of winter, and I'm thinking it's the perfect time to go down to San Diego and hang out for a few days. Yeah. Well, but I don't know where.
Well, so I quite like the idea of San Diego.
Well, so wherever you're going to be in the world, then, I know you're quite the world traveler. Come on by to San Diego. We'll hang out. But don't steal my gig, man.
No.
You outrank me. I am merely a duke.
You've got the key.
So now what was your topic? I know what your topic was, but I'll leave it to you to say. Your topic at TEDx was?
Well, the theme... The theme was resilient cities, and that's what they wanted me to talk about, which I brought into the talk. But I kind of came at it from an angle of a little bit of sort of the cultural history of the area, San Francisco and the counterculture, and how we all sort of had that revolution out of San Francisco, which was kind of in my teenage years, and that was the big, you know, change in society, really, that a lot of us remiss, you know, we sort of look back on as a special era. But what it created was like a counterculture. And, you know, later on we had the Silicon Valley and the big computer sort of thing happen out of there. And there's all these images of rainbows and natural symbols, but it was all about anything that wasn't normal culture was okay. It was anything that countered normal culture, but it didn't really have a rhyme and reason, and everybody wanted some degree of individuality, and it just created more consumerism, and it boosted the production and consumption economy, and the message right in the core of it all was we should switch out of this production and consumption economy into an ecological economy where humans are the beneficial element, the most beneficial element on Earth, the most positive element, that the element that creates positive carbon footprints, not carbon neutrality, but moves into a carbon positive, creative, regenerative action by design. And that's a bigger economy than any production consumption economy that's premised on perpetual growth in a finite world where resources are going to deplete. We're not enhancing regenerative resources, which can be made more abundant all the time, can be continuously regenerated beyond our imagination. We don't realize how abundant the world could be. It's not within our capability to realize how bad we are now, how much damage we can create with the situation of technology that we've created. But also on the opposite, on the flip side of that, we don't realize how incredibly abundant and creative our design mind into action can be, how our directive to act from taking knowledge to understanding, from information, which we're drowning in, to knowledge, to understanding. At understanding, we actually take action. If our directive is correct, we're into that ecological economy. We have something completely in common in our theme, but we have the ultimate individuality, because you never see two permaculture designs the same. You never see people approaching permaculture in exactly the same way, but we all share the common theme and ethics. And I know ethics are a touchy word on permies, of course, but it's a core central theme to the way we design, the way we approach design. We are an ethical design science. What are we about? We're about science and ethics. Where does it lead? Absolute abundance. So if we unify now, if we get more and more people over that line, I'm wanting to create people to look to permaculture, not the permies, but how do us permies help people just come over and just take a look at this? Don't worry about what it's called. Don't worry about the name permaculture. Don't worry about what you've heard about it. Just have a look at the common sense of this for a minute. Just give us a glance in this direction of fraction, right? Now just take a closer look. It's not quite what you thought it was. Look, it's got a lot of very common sense grounded science in this. So if we can move people over that line, if we can give people that move towards a sensible tipping point, I think we've got the world in check. It can't argue with our system. It's verifying it and endorsing it all the time. It's one checkmate move now, and we're there. And I think that's what a lot of people in permaculture are focusing on now. How do we increase the numbers? How do we move faster now? How do we get to that positive tipping point before we get into a free fall negative tipping point?
So I want to take a stab at rephrasing what you just said just a little bit, and that is that you see a path where it is inevitable that permaculture will be the end game. And so and not only that, but it's like it's because like a lot of people are very concerned, and they're thinking about, because when you mention the word survival, then a lot of people are really concerned about, oh, we're going to have economic collapse, we're going to have bad guy things, we're going to have, I mean, there's like 87 different flavors of doom. And so, but what you're saying is that you believe that there's a path through simple demonstration, personal, one at a time, one person, like whoever, like the one person that's listening to this podcast right now, that person does some demonstration. That is what is going to make it so that the end game is permaculture, and it's going to be an easy thing to do. It's like an inevitable destination.
It that path is actually a neural pathway in our brains. It's a different way to think. And once you exercise that pathway, there's new research with neural science that our brains have plasticity. So that's how we learn to be incredibly skilled at certain things, even our sense of touch, or, you know, as a musician, if you spend 10,000 hours practicing any subject, any discipline, you become a master at it. But if you drive that neural pathway to become more skilled, what happens is you reframe the plasticity of your brain towards design thinking reality. So that's what I see is happening with the students. Now, if we realize that, if we say, okay, let's drive that faster, you start to get very excited. Now, it's not just that people are, it's what they do on the ground. Of course, it's what they do on the ground is demonstration. That's all verifiable, and, you know, it's concrete, not literally concrete, but it's there as an example. So we have, you know, we have YouTube, we have Google Earth, we have all these wonderful before and after photos. We can communicate so fast with this information. It's flying around right now. But what people are also seeing is, hey, you're really excited. Like, you're really buzzed about this. Like, you're really enjoying life. Yeah, your life has changed. It's kind of got a lot of meaning all of a sudden. And people will say to you, hey, yeah. And you know what? It feels like time's kind of expanded because I'm enjoying everything that I'm doing. I'm really getting an excited event out of this, and I can see it going forward in time, and I'm starting to understand what I do and how I interact. And it's infinitely complex, but at the same time, it's extremely stimulating. Now, other people want part of that buzz. They're saying, hey, give me some of that. How do you get that? We said, well, look, I did this thing called a PDC, and I've never recovered. It's kind of terminally changed the way I think about reality. Really? Wow, that's the best counterculture thing I've ever heard. Is it? How do you do that? I said, well, you just, like, you've got to find out about this stuff. Like, you know, well, how? You know, well, and then Permies can show people stuff nowadays. You can, and when I did my course, I couldn't see a swale. I couldn't find one. The first whale I ever saw, I put it in myself. Now they're everywhere. I mean, they're online all over the place, you know. They're often within walking distance wherever you are, actually. So it's a new game. We're in a game change. And it's time to step up to that game change and, like, let's get it over that line.
Do you know Michael Pilarski, Skeeter?
I've never met him. I've communicated a little bit online. I've seen some of his videos. Okay.
So he's the guy that I took my PDC from in 2005. And now, before I took the PDC, I read all the books. And then I took the PDC, and I kind of felt like I wasn't going to probably learn much, but I was going to take the PDC so that I could use the word permaculture in whatever projects I was going to do. And so I thought, I'm just doing time. I'm just doing the time. I'm doing the required 2 weeks. And but the thing is what I learned at the PDC, I learned a ton of stuff that was not in the books. But one of, along the lines of exactly what you're saying, is one of the most important things, and it was all the people that were there, the students as well as the instructors, their position was that they were tired of telling people to stop doing bad things. And the reason that they're there is because for the rest of their lives, all they want to do is build good things and then show that. Look, I built a good thing. And because I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. It's kind of like if you just try and tell people, you go out and you say, hey, there's a better way, they kind of tend to tune you out. They don't. But if you show them, hey, look at my garden. Look at what I made. Look at what I did. And it is amazing and spectacular and beautiful. Then they're drawn to it. And they're like, gimme. I want some of that. I think that's what you said.
Yeah. Well, when you did the PDC, I expect what you did was draw on a lot of your life experiences and reprogram them into relevance in relation to what you were actually hearing as the design science of permaculture as it was taught. So you were re-referencing a lot of your memories, and they were coming back into relevance, and then your life experiences come back into relevance. Now, everybody else in that room was doing that. And then your teacher, Skeeter, there, Michael Pilarski, he was actually doing that as well in relation to the questions you students were asking him in relation to your life experience. So he was in a reprogramming situation as well, refining reprogramming. New neural pathways unifying together in the same direction with an unlimited amount of variation, the ultimate counterculture.
I guess the point that I want to emphasize is the idea of building good things instead of being angry at bad guys.
Yeah, well, that was what
That was a powerful fuel for me.
Yeah, Bill actually, he removed himself from society and built himself a barn and a garden and sat in the bush, and then quite quickly realized this isn't going to work. They're going to roll over me anyway. So he said, right, I better come up with a system to go back into society and change it. And he decided that instead of protest, which didn't seem to be working, what he needed to do was define what we do want rather than protesting about what we don't want. We know what we don't want. That's pretty clear. So let's define very clearly what we do want and overpower everything that we don't want. And that's where it's come to. And I think, like what I'm emphasizing, is a lot of things that you may have thought were irrelevant now suddenly have relevance, and you can put them into perspectives. I find that a lot of people, when they do a PDC, within the first week to the second week, they start to actually dream permaculture. I ask people, tell me if you're having permaculture dreams while you're asleep, because that probably means that you're continuing to reprogram and change your neural pathway relevance to your memories. And most people come in and say, oh, crumbs, I'm having permaculture dreams. You haven't got time in your waking hours to actually keep up with what your brain's doing in relation to developing those new design pathway thinking processes. And that's real exciting. But it is all about positive. We're a system that's, you know, all about multi-disciplines and connectivity, orientated towards solutions based in positivism. It's a simple way of saying, you know, that's what we're about. It's more about solutions and problems. It's all about solutions and positive approaches.
So now, we talked a little bit about your TED Talk. And then at the same time that the TED Talk comes out, there's your brand new website. And so now you're still going to do all the PRI stuff that you've always done and all the web stuff that's over there. And now there is also jefflawton.com.
That's right.
So now, so you emailed me and said, check it out, jefflawton.com. So I went in. And it says, so basically, if you put in your email address, it gives you a 35-minute video. And I watched the video, and there was all, I mean, this is the biggest free video I think you've ever put out. And it's got some stuff about greening the desert, some of the old footage from the old Greening the Desert. It's got a bunch of new stuff I haven't seen before. I think I saw a couple of specs from some of your other DVDs. But it's a large, cohesive video on, and it's called How to Survive the Coming Crisis, and basically it's about building resilience. Is that, have I said that correctly?
That's correct. That's what it's
okay.
about.
Maybe I should shut up and let you talk about the video.
Well, we've got an ongoing development, of course, at Zaytuna Farm, where PRI is based in Australia, and we have 10 years worth of reference material. So we got some very new technology in the form of some little remote helicopter with cameras. And
that was so cool. That was awesome.
And we've got it at all different angles, and we've got the history of the site. And later videos that we're going to release, we've flown down the inside of 10-year-old swales in a little quadricopter with a camera running. We've flown around, you know, intricate, intimate parts of the site, and we've explained it, and we've put down graphics on top of the movies. We've stopped the movie, and we've laid out design elements on the landscape. We've explained where swales run, how they sit on contour, where access is on contour, how food forests are developing, where food gardens are, where grazing systems are, how the whole polycultural pattern works with cell grazing in amongst food forests, in amongst crop gardens, in amongst farm forestry, in amongst aquaculture, in amongst water harvesting, where houses and structures are positioned. We're laying it out for people so that you can see this reality taking place. We're using the technology of the information age to get it to you instant. And we're going to make it available for you on your iPhone, your Android, your iPad, into your computer. So we're building this information for you so that you can really get more of an idea of what's possible and that how positive it is. We're using animation as usual. So we're simplifying it into animation, then giving you the reality shots as well. So all of this together, so that you can get and understanding of it, and you can show people and say, hey, you want to know what permaculture is? Have a look at this. You know, or you want to see something special. You don't even have to mention the word permaculture. You just say, you're interested in survival? You know, there seems to be a lot of potential crisis out there. You ever thought about your family and, you know, how you're going to sort of supply your needs for your family and your friends? Or you ever thought about that? Just, you know, if you're slightly interested, just check this out. You know, just have a look. It might be really valuable to you. So I'm trying to help people. We've got to get more people understanding what it is we're doing, because we can push this thing over the line. That's what we've got to do.
I agree. And so I put out a few videos. You might have. I don't know if you've ever looked at any of them.
Yeah, I have.
Oh, good. And of course, you know about my podcast. You've been in, I believe, three podcasts with me in the past. so yes, I'm very passionate. Like, what can I think? I spend most of every day thinking of exactly what you just said. How can I get the word permaculture into a whole bunch more brains? You know, in the next hour, and in the next hour, and in the next hour. And so that seems to be where I spend huge tracts of my time. And yes, I hope, I mean, maybe that's what we should be focusing on, is like, each, for every permaculture convergence, there should be like a plenary or a class that says, hey, everybody, here's how you learn how to help push information out, whether it's mine or yours or Maddie Harlan's or all the other bits and bobs of permaculture information that's out there. Just keep pushing it, and it'll get into more and more eyeballs and brains, and when it's in more brains, we'll see more change. And imagine, I mean, I imagine it every day. What would happen if permaculture was, like, even 1% of permaculture was in the brains of a quarter of the world's population? That's just a warming thought to me.
Yeah.
And so each day I think, how do I get a little closer to that? And it's going to be, and I kind of think of it like the man who planted trees. You've seen that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he plants 100 trees per day. And so that's kind of what I'm thinking of when I go out every day. And it's like, I'm going to find 100 new brains each day. And sometimes I can even find a few thousand new brains in a day. And it's like, I don't know, I got hooked on doing this. I'm kind of addicted to trying to get it out there. To me, it feels compellingly important. It has to be done. This is the path to making things better, and telling bad guys to stop doesn't seem like that does much, but going out and telling people about good things, that to me does. So and along those lines, I'm looking at your webpage right now, and it says, we're not planning to launch this video until early in 2013, so please enjoy the video and keep this under your hat for now. Oh, Jeff, maybe we shouldn't be talking about this. Is it a secret?
Yeah, well, it leaked out, so it's out there now.
It's out there now. Okay. All right. And so it's cool for people to share this, to pass it on.
Yeah, please. And
okay.
And just to let you know, I mean, as far as, you know, telling a lot of people, we're just about to release a lot of permaculture footage into China television and 10 African countries.
Oh, wow.
So there's whole networks are now taken up. And my aim is to have this sort of information available, you know, to more people 24/7 and everybody to be up to date with the latest technology availability. So we have to, you know, if we're going to change the paradigm, we have to use the systems that are available to people now. So most of the people have incredibly poor time quality and time density out there. They're stuck somewhere. They're stuck in their production consumption machine. And what they're looking at is some kind of mobile device. We're going to make it available for you on that mobile device. And so you can review it and get to really understand it. And one video after another, we're just going to bring it on. and bring it on so you can see it in every which way you it's possible.
So what are you showing on television in Africa and China? Is it all your DVDs?
We're cutting a deal right now on, you know, the a lot of our videos that are on PRI, and there's a new link between the PRI and television network, an environmental television network, linked to John D. Louis, who documented the lowest plateau work in China and is also doing a lot of work in Rwanda and Ethiopia. So we have a network now of 10 countries in Africa and the whole of China. And the more we get it out there, the better. I'm also releasing videos in Arabic that are going to go right across the Arabic countries as well. So we've just created a new institute in Morocco. The Tunisian government are interested in using urban agriculture, the new Tunisian government. Egypt's going wild. There's all kinds of initiatives happening there. They want to do a lot of work on sustainability systems. So we've made sure that we've got this information covered in many of the large languages of the world. A lot of people are also putting in not just translations but subtitles into minor languages. So it's a matter of moving this, you know, information up and out, because we are the mainstream. What's happened is people keep saying, you know, I wish permaculture could get in the mainstream. What's happened is that the mainstream's just realized who we are, and we're central to it. They've just caught up with us. We haven't had to catch up with the mainstream. There's nothing to catch up with. You couldn't be more destructive than what's going on already out there. The mainstream's just realized who we are, and they've just caught up with us. And they've been circling us for a little while, wondering how to land on this island of permaculture, and it's time. This is it. We've got to move.
So I mean, like, what, is there some mainstream media that's, like, touching some permaculture stuff?
Well, there's, you know, we've had, you know, there's been plenty of permaculture interviews and small segments on CNN and CBS and you know, a lot of major television has covered permaculture, but it's time, really, to get into a situation where, you know, the education is online 24/7 for the world's population.
Well, I'm for it. Let's see all kinds of permaculture. Let's see it do it. Let's see it go. Let's see it happen. Yeah, I'm in.
This concludes part one of this podcast. Please stay tuned for part two.